Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Welcome to a special edition of Tape to Tape, T2T. There's a lot of T's in there, and one of them, well, sort of, is for trade. Oh my God, it happened. Actually, trades plural. We're going to touch on all the moves that went down on what wound up being a very intriguing, busy day in the NHL. In terms of bodies going here, bodies going there. But before we get into any of that minute stuff by comparison, Rory Boylan, is this the most sensible, awesome trade that we've seen in a long time? I am, of course, speaking of Ryan Johansson, billed as a number one center, going to the Nashville Predators for Seth Jones, now billed as a number one defenseman who will get his chance to prove he can fill that role.
Yeah, great trade for both sides, really. I'm more comfortable with it from Nashville's perspective because this is the exact piece they needed. There's no doubt they have an amazing goalie and an amazing defense, and they have pretty good depth up front, but they don't have that offense to kind of kick them into another gear to hang with the Dallases and the Chicagos and the St. Louises of the division. And this still doesn't get them to that level, but it definitely pushes the needle in that direction, and it improves them where they needed to improve. And I think Nashville becomes a really serious threat now in the Western Conference, especially if they can get out of Ryan Johansson what he wasn't quite giving the Columbus Blue Jackets to this point. Peter Laviolette's got a challenge on his hands here. He's got to get out of Johansson what Johansson's supposed to be. And that's a supreme scorer. He's got to be that number one center which he wasn't always in Columbus. Sure. His minutes were going up and down and up and down, and Tortorella was definitely challenging him, and he had been criticized a lot with his how in or out of shape he was, how much he was giving on the ice. And now Nashville's with him, and they have to get that out of him. Right? From Columbus's perspective, it's a nice trade. You get the guy who you think is going to be a number one defenseman for you in the future. It's going to be interesting to see what Jones gives you right out of the bat, right out of the gate. I think Jones is an awesome defenseman for sure, but it's going to be neat to see him out from underneath the shadow of Weber and Josie and Ekholm and kind of being insulated by that really deep defense in Nashville. Maybe he's like Ryan Suter and he leaves and is like, oh man, this guy's way better than we thought he was. But until he gets out, you don't really know. And he's going to be on a bad team too. There's no insulating there, right? So I feel really good about it for Columbus or for Nashville. Columbus has made some really bad trades in the past though. And they're the worst team in the NHL right now. So you have to look at this with a little bit of caution.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Well, we're going to cover all the bases. We're going to talk about Vinny LeCavalier going to the West Coast. We're going to talk about Mike Richards returning and signing a contract with the Washington Capitals. But we're going to devote most of our time to this big Johansson-Jones trade. We're not going to waste any of your time with our voices any longer. First up, giving us the Columbus perspective, we're going to put a call into Aaron Portsline, intrepid beat reporter of the Blue Jackets. He's going to take us inside the mind of the Columbus decision makers, tell us what the real story was between Johansson and his coach and his general manager and ownership, and just give us a sense of exactly where things were at and what may have led to this move. Aaron Portsline coming up next on Tape to Tape.
Weber thought about a shot, now LeJuan takes over. Across to Jones, got a big shot, fires, he scores! It's his first goal in the National Hockey League. Seth Jones with a power play goal.
Joining us now on the line, it is Aaron Portsline, beat reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, the whole world is calling this the most logical, awesome trade two teams can make. Is that how you view it as someone who's right on the scene?
Well, it makes a ton of sense. I think, you know, it's one of those rare instances in this salary cap world where you get a straight mano-a-mano trade. There's no picks to balance it out, no prospects, no contingencies. I think, you know, and the reason for that is pretty clear. Nashville has been dying to get a number one center, I think, as long as they've been in the league, since 1998. Never had that guy. Those guys are hard to find. Columbus thought they finally had one, but they swapped him for the franchise defenseman they've never had, and Nashville had plenty of those to, you know, plenty of depth on the blue line. So Seth Jones, that may be the only team that Seth Jones could be called expendable on, given their depth on the blue line. And so these two teams, I think Columbus was ready to make a move with Johansson for a while now. These two teams found each other. I think it made so much sense, and the deal finally came together.
Johansson was definitely in the crosshairs of John Tortorella, being benched a couple times, his ice time fluctuating. Now, Jarmo Kekäläinen said last night that Torts had nothing to do with this trade. The relationship between the two had nothing to do with it. But do you think if Tortorella didn't come to Columbus as head coach, that Johansson would still be with the team?
I do not. I don't always agree with Jarmo Kekäläinen, and I do agree with him on this. I think the beef with Johansson was much more with management than it was with Tortorella. I really do. I think it's easy to look at the situation and draw the conclusion. Mm-hmm. Young player underproducing, coach that's known to be stern and a disciplinarian. Of course they didn't get along. They actually did get along. And Tortorella had issues. It wasn't just with Johansson. He benched Scott Hartnell. He benched Fedor Tuten. He was going to bench Ryan Murray until they had a late injury and Murray had to go in as the seventh defenseman. This was not a bad relationship at all between Tortorella and Johansson. And even in private moments, both of those guys talked in terms about the other person, that Tortorella was not easy on Ryan Johansson. But I don't think Johansson felt that he couldn't play for Tortorella anymore or felt that any of it was personal. I do think there was still a personal issue between Johansson and the Blue Jackets management. It lingered. They had issues with the kid. They didn't like his body language. They didn't like his attitude. They didn't like some of the things he said. I think Tortorella was delighted to get Seth Jones back. I think most of these coaches love to be defensive-minded first. But I think Tortorella, in fact, I asked him this, I think he was really looking forward to coaching Ryan Johansson and seeing what he could get out of that player who's just got boundless amounts of talent that has not shown through this season.
A few weeks ago, we were talking about Johansson and Tortorella and the Blue Jackets as a whole, and we mentioned one of your columns after the game in which you described Johansson's play. You had seen suburbanites skate harder on the Columbus Zoo's holiday pond. That he's going to, which was a great line.
Kudos.
Thank you.
With him going to Nashville now, what does Laviolette and the coaches over there need to do to get out of Johansson what he's supposed to become as a number four pick? Is he salvageable?
He absolutely is. I mean, I think this is going to be an ongoing issue with him in his career. I think Shea Weber has a big role in this too. And if I think that could be a big part of what the change is. Ryan Johansson's he's a good kid. He's not one of those types that is uniquely obsessed with winning hockey games. It's a little Joe Thornton in there. And some would say he's not self-motivated. That's probably fair. He needs to be nudged and pushed. he has the ability, in my opinion, to be a top five forward in the game. He's that good. And you saw moments of it these last couple years. Were there some resting on the laurels this summer? Perhaps. Perhaps. There was a health scare as well. He was hospitalized at least once with an accelerated heart rate. I don't know what that's all about. Ryan has either declined to say or has said that he's not sure what it was, but everything is fine. He's got to get in shape. It's easy for sports writers and people on the outside to make fun of these guys. It's not like neighborhood out of shape, but it's NHL guy out of shape. He's not there. And you see it. It shows in the back-to-back games. It shows in the 3 and 4 nights. It shows in the overtimes. Just can't keep up with the pace of play. That has to change. If he becomes physically committed, if he becomes obsessed with winning hockey games and being that difference maker, he can be an absolutely sublime player in the National Hockey League. There's no question.
Well, if Columbus is giving up someone with that potential, you know they believe in what they're getting back. Jones is an interesting case because, as you said, Nashville's the only team where someone like him might be deemed expendable. This is now he's entering his third year in the league, or is halfway through his third year in the league. And, of course, the point totals haven't been big, but neither has the ice time. He's been brought along slow. What do you think Columbus believes it's getting? Are we talking really, really good defensemen, or do they see him as that straight-up number one stud rock to build everyone else on the blue line around?
I think they see him as a 1-2, a top-pairing defenseman. He's going to start with Ryan Murray. So you've got the number 4 overall pick in the 13 draft and the number 2 overall pick in the 12 draft. Right next to each other. That should be a really good pair. They see him as a big-time minutes guy, an unbelievable athlete, gifted skater. He's a big dude, too. You don't notice that until you stand next to him. It's all there. He's going to get an opportunity here that he did not get in Nashville. And when he looked down the road in Nashville, it was hard to see that opportunity there. This is what he's been waiting for. I think he was sad to leave Nashville because it's his comfort zone, but he's even said that this is the opportunity he's looking for. I think they're going to try to be cool at first, not shovel too much his way, but I would be surprised if you don't see within the next couple weeks him starting to creep up 24, 25 minutes. And plus, he's going to get power play time here that he never got in Nashville. They're going to run him until he tells them that he's not up for it, and we'll see at what point that is reached.
You referenced the number 2 overall pick that they have, Ryan Murray, who at this point might be in the running for most anonymous number 2 overall pick in a long time. I mean, for a number of reasons, really, right? Some injury troubles and just the kind of player he is. He wasn't drafted by the Boston Bruins or Leafs or something, so that, you know, his profile suffered because of that. But I'm just curious, while we're talking Jackets D, what's the take on him these days? What do they see for him down the road? Is he still someone they believe can be an elite NHL defenseman? What's the take on Murray these days?
Well, yeah, they do still think he's there. I think there's a satisfaction in all they wanted for this kid last year was health. And he has been the poster child for the injuries that have gone on around here, just one thing after another with him. There were concerns that the knee injury was a career problem, is going to be with him for a long time. I think he's okay. He's one of the few guys that's played every game this year. As frustrating as those injuries were, that's almost enough for them, that he can stay healthy and play this game. He has started to come on here. I think he's one of the guys that has responded very well to Tortorella's style. You're starting to see games where he's taking over the Jack Johnson minutes, which can only be a good thing. 24, 25 minutes a night. It's quiet. He plays a quiet game. That's when you don't notice Ryan Murray, that's when you notice that he's played well. I didn't like his game for the first couple months of the season. He seemed soft and distant and not engaged. He started to come on a little bit here. He makes very quiet plays. He made a play the other night against Washington where he, with Ovechkin, where he did not back down. He confronted the puck. He played it absolutely perfectly. And that's what they're looking for, that sort of elite matchup type play. And he came out on the right end of it. There's another level there for him. But so there's so much relief that he's able to play and stay healthy, given what he's been through, given what the team has been through since they drafted him, that this year is almost seen as a just don't get hurt year and prove yourself as a guy that can stay healthy in the National Hockey League and then begin to thrive as you move along.
I think most people were expecting a bit of a bounce back year from the Blue Jackets, and quite a few people were even picking them to make the playoffs or at least be in the running for the playoffs. A lot of injuries last year, hurt the team. But now they're last place in the league behind Buffalo and Edmonton and Carolina. I mean, is that what this team is now, or is there more to this team? What now?
Well, they see themselves as a major disappointment. I don't think there's any getting around that. And quite frankly, I'm not sure management knows what's wrong or how to get out of it. There's been a sense of shock here for a while. They lost the first 8 games of the year. They're pretty much 500 under Tortorella. That's not good enough. That's not what they had in mind. They thought of themselves as a playoff team. They thought of themselves as a team that should be able to win in the playoffs. And they've had a bit of a reset. The management's still trying to build it as them building. But if you go back and look at the press conference at the end of last season, they believed that they were there. They finished 15-1-1. That may have been the worst stretch of hockey that this franchise has ever seen, when it should be among the best. It messed up their draft pick. They would have been in the running for Connor McDavid. That played their way into the number 8 selection instead of having a great chance at the lottery pick. And I think it gave everybody, players, but especially management, most critically, it gave management the sense that this team had all the pieces that it needed, that it only had to stay healthy. And they were, quite frankly, not prepared mentally, most would say physically, for the start of the season. And there has been a sense of shock at all reaches of the organization from the start of the season. Tortorella's come in, very strong personality. One of only a few people, I think, in the game that could come in here as messed up and as scrambled as everything was, everybody looking for answers, and just went right to the heart of the matter. And there's a sense that there's some realness coming into the organization now, especially with the dressing room. That's not management's dressing room. That's the players' dressing room. With the captain who was picked this summer, Nick Foligno, is that management's captain or is that the players' captain? The room's being reshuffled. There's a sense of things getting being exposed to the light of day that have needed to be exposed for a long time around here. And this Johansson trade is a huge step towards that. That is not the type of player that you trade easily. This is, for me, very similar to Joe Thornton 10 years ago. I think the Blue Jackets did well to get a very large piece in return rather than pieces, parts, what the Bruins got from San Jose when that trade was made. But very similar situations.
Well, I don't know if logic and excitement often go in the same sentence, but it certainly applies to this deal. Aaron, thanks a ton for coming on and talking today and giving us the Columbus perspective.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Aaron Portsline, beat reporter covering the Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. You can follow him on Twitter @aportsline. An amazing trade. We've heard it from the Columbus view. We're going to kick around the Nashville perspective when we return on Tape to Tape.
I want to break free.
If we didn't make this trade today, we'd be trying to make the same trade tomorrow, the next day, in the off season. Looking at free agency, looking at the draft, it just wasn't there. So this is a good move for us today.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape, talking trade today. It was a big one. Man, oh man. Ryan Johansson going from the Columbus Blue Jackets to the Nashville Predators. First off, Rory, I think we're very conditioned to just sort of flippantly saying, oh, you can't get young talent in. And, you know, young talent never moves. They got locked up for 8 years. They got locked up. let's just go over the list. Tyler Seguin got traded in the past, going back to, I guess that was the summer of 2013. Evander Kane has been traded. Dougie Hamilton has been traded. Ryan O'Reilly has been traded. Can we stop saying that young under 25 guys don't move in the NHL at this point?
Yeah. I mean, you better be ready to, you don't even have to really pay up all the time, right?
Sure.
I mean, Dougie Hamilton was a steal for the Calgary Flames. But yeah, I mean, they're available, right? And we're still not done. Jonathan Drouin.
That's right. That's right. We could be doing another emergency pod tomorrow.
Yeah. And he's not on the same level at all, but Kirby Reichel,
right,
prospect for Columbus, has asked for a trade as well. So, and you got to think there's other guys out there who have asked for a trade who we haven't learned
that's
about
right.
yet because
their agent is an Alan Walsh.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Drouin thing, he requested it in November and we just found out
right.
about it. So who knows how many other ones are hanging out there that will pop up. But yeah, they're available.
It's exciting.
Right? They're
it's
available.
Exciting.
The Dallas Stars, I mean, what a steal that was to get Seguin from
sure.
the Bruins, too.
I mean, that's still the granddaddy, no doubt.
But,
well, we might be talking about, I don't know about steal, but we had Aaron Portsline on talking about the Columbus perspective. From Nashville's side of things, you mentioned off the top, basically, you like it for Columbus, you love it for Nashville. I think David Poile loves this for Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say, I was in Nashville in October. I actually did a feature on Seth Jones and the Great Wall of Nashville that they've built there. And not that Poile or anyone was going to say, well, you know, we'd be comfortable parting with this guy. But I really never got the sense that either Jones or the team, even though we from the outside could look at it and go, oh, it makes clear sense because they have a surplus of these great defensemen. I never got the sense that was the intention. Even after making this trade, Poile said, hey, I wanted my cake and to eat it too. Like, I wanted to get this guy and I didn't want to give up Jones. But ultimately, when you look at that blue line with Shea Weber and Roman Josi still at the top, I'm pretty sure we have to stop calling Roman Josi the most underrated player in the NHL because everyone knows by now, but this guy can do it all. He's fantastic. They have such a solid core there that I don't know how there's any way not to be as excited as Poile is about this deal for Nashville.
Yeah, they had so much depth at the position that Columbus was after that they can make this trade a huge piece, a great player, and not even be the worse for the wear. I mean, they're going to be just fine with what they have left over, right? And all when David Poile was on the broadcast last night, and he was talking about how this came to be, and when he called Jarmo Kekalainen and asked him about the availability of Ryan Johansson, Kekalainen said, I would need to get one of your good young D back. And it was Jones that he parted with. So what does that say about Roman Josi? What does that say about Matthias Ekholm? That they kept these guys. I don't think Ryan Ellis would have been one of those guys.
That would never. And I don't think Ekholm would have got it done either, but maybe Ekholm plus.
Yeah, and even Ekholm, I think, is a little underrated.
He's
the next guy.
Well, now he slides in as a guy who's probably perfectly suited to second pair, right?
Yeah.
Not a guy who's going to be like, I'm on the second pair, but I wish I was on the first and I should be.
Yeah, so, I mean, what does it say about those guys that they are still with the team? And Seth Jones, a guy who, like you said, Poile himself said he didn't want to trade him.
Well, you know, in the last time I saw David Poile as excited as he was when he acquired Ryan Johansson, the day he drafted Seth Jones, and they couldn't get on the stage fast enough because he fell to four, we all thought, I think Colorado had stated its intentions at that point. They were going to take Nathan MacKinnon number one, but Jones two, three for sure, and he ends up falling to four, and the Panthers were like, get the jersey and get on stage right now before something changes.
It, well, and the Panthers took Barkov that year ahead of Jones, which was shocking to a lot of people, right?
Sure.
I think, if I remember right, David Poile was trying to trade up in the draft to get Seth Jones to make sure that he was going to be able to get him. And then he just falls to him at number four. And yeah, that works out perfectly. Because that's what Nashville's always been, right? Is the team with strong blue line. They're really good at developing blue liners. Shea Weber's a second round pick. And a strong goalie behind it all. Never really the team with the offensive punch.
Just lacked the punch, right?
Yeah. I think they have to go for it now, right? They are in.
Oh yeah, and things,
they're still young,
and
but
things slide down pretty nice too down the middle. Now you've got old sort of, you know, cagey Mike Ribeiro who can still set up plays a little bit, help your power play a lot, And hey, Mike Fisher, I mean, I know the guy's traditionally had a hard time staying in the lineup, but watching him play live when I was down there, you forget, like, he's a thick, two-way, nasty bit of business. Yep. And he's the kind of guy who you could see in a playoff run going out there and getting some of those dirty old greasy goals that help a team through. So now all of a sudden things just slot in beautifully down the middle.
And on the wing, I mean, James Neal could hit 30 goals this year. He's got 15 and 40 games right now. Philip Forsberg's a really nice young talent too. There's suddenly Nashville's forward.
Let's have this conversation. Where do they slot in a Western Conference where they play in the division of death? They have to deal with the dynastic Chicago Blackhawks. Chicago beat them out last year en route to a cup. Chicago beat them out en route to another cup going back to 2010, I believe, if I have my numbers right there. So is this the kind of move we could say carries Nashville over the top, or do we still have to wait and see if they can really... Are you prepared to put them in the list of heavyweight contenders?
I want to see how Johansson responds first, because of all the doubts that have been around the guy. You need to see how he responds to this trade.
Well, and what is a better panacea than for someone who comes with the rap of having an attitude problem than going to Nashville? Like, Nashville is the most respected you can be without hanging a championship banner. The only organizations more respected than Nashville are teams that have won a cup, or I would even say multiple cups.
Yeah.
They just have that structure, right? They're like
Devils. They're always there.
They're the Devils of without the championships from 95 to 2005. It's like, you come here, this is how it works, we succeed with it, and you're doing it.
Yeah. To me, when it comes down to the stretch part of the season and in the playoffs, things change. It's not the same as winning in November and December. I could see Nashville giving a real hard time to a team like Dallas, who's very one way, very offensive, and that doesn't always translate to success in the playoffs. And now Nashville is kind of rounding out what they have to offer defense and offense. I mean, I can't go so far as to say that I think they could beat Chicago or LA. Those teams are just, everybody agrees, they're just on another level. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do versus how St. Louis does this year, because they're both kind of these teams with, again, depth at defense, good goalies, but haven't really ever had that scoring punch. St. Louis now has Tarasenko, who is amazing and a huge difference maker, a fantastic goal scorer. Now they have that. Now Nashville might have that kind of stuff too. And they're both teams that haven't won anything, that need to sort of get over that hump. I mean, if St. Louis doesn't get over that hump, maybe Hitchcock's gone and things change over there. So how far do those teams go? And if they play each other in the playoffs, that could be an awesome series.
Well, I was just looking at the standings. Nashville at present holds the last wild card, has a 2-point edge over Colorado. But I almost wonder if the Preds would rather maintain one of the wild cards and not get into a situation, certainly where you play Chicago in a 2-3 matchup in the division, or even possibly avoiding St. Louis, that if to some degree, if you injected them with truth serum, they'd say, you know what, give us a crack at Dallas, even though Dallas might end up winning the President's Trophy for all the reasons you mentioned, and the fact that Dallas is unproven in the playoffs, maybe that's actually Nashville's preferred matchup.
Yeah, I'm just looking here. So St. Louis Nashville have played 3 times this year, and St. Louis has won every one of them. 2 of them were one-goal games, though. And against Chicago, Nashville's played Chicago twice. Both games were not close, 4-1 and 5-1, but they were split.
Right.
So, but again, once you get to the playoffs in the late season, things change. And Johansson just adds a different dynamic to this Nashville team. You think, again, we have to see how he responds to this. Is he, because he wasn't, like we've said, he wasn't always the number one center in Columbus this year, but he needs to be that in Nashville. So what do they get out of Johansson this year?
Well, crazy as it is, this wasn't the only move we saw on a busy day in the NHL. I guess the one that maybe offers the most intrigue, just because there's a few more parts involved. Vinny LeCavalier, Luke Shen going to the Philadelphia, or sorry, going from the Philadelphia Flyers to the LA Kings in exchange for a prospect and a pick. What do you make of this deal? Do you think either of the players leaving Philadelphia have something of substance to provide LA?
Well, first of all, I think it's amazing that Philadelphia was able to trade both of these guys in one deal.
Sure. Retaining some salary, of course.
Yeah. So what Shen brings to LA is that Matt Green is out for the season and they need to replace that. Shen isn't great. He's a bottom pair guy now. But again, I think it's just about depth for LA. They're going for the Stanley Cup. There's no official paperwork that they can sign with Vinny LeCavalier, but he's given them their word that he's going to retire after this season so that they don't owe him the contract on the books next year, which they wouldn't be able to afford under the cap. You know, LeCavalier, I don't know what he really has left in the tank, if he has anything at all left in the tank, but you stick him on the fourth line and see what he can give you, and maybe he gives you a clutch goal. He's still got that pedigree, still got that experience, and you put him in a locker room with LA where he knows a lot of these guys. There's certainly got to be a lot of respect in that room, and the goal, everybody knows what the goal is here, and LeCavalier, Lombardi was talking about it yesterday. It was to give LeCavalier one last chance to go for the Stanley Cup. And if that doesn't give you the motivation to bear down.
But what will?
What will? Exactly.
Jordan Wheel, the forward, going back to Philly along with a third round pick. The other move, also with ties to LA, Mike Richards signs a prorated 1 year, $1 million deal with the team that is clearly the favorite in the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals.
I like this one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you're not worried foot speed and,
there's no risk for Washington here. You're paying them $1 million prorated for 1 year. So if it doesn't work out, you lose them for nothing in the offseason. If it doesn't work out, you just don't play them. You know, you don't have to put this guy in your lineup. But what I think he can bring, he doesn't need to be a top six player anymore. All you need from Mike Richards is penalty kill. Put him on the penalty kill and let him be a specialist for your team. Give him a few minutes, put him on the penalty kill and see what he can do for your team. Again, just like the LeCavalier-Shen deal for LA, it's just about depth. When you look at any team that wins the Stanley Cup, they have so much depth down the lineup. They get contributions from third and fourth line guys at big moments, and everywhere Mike Richards has gone, and this isn't something
literally
that you can
everywhere.
Yeah.
This is not just figured,
you can't quantify this.
Yeah.
This isn't something
Memorial
that you'll
Cup,
find in numbers.
World Championship,
he
World
wins.
Junior, Stanley Cup, Calder Cup. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and again, you can't quantify that. There's nothing that you can point to and say this is the value that this brings that you can expect him to bring. But there's something there. Some players have that, and you know it's there,
sure.
Right? And I'm not saying that all of a sudden this makes Washington, I picked them to come out of the East. I don't think this makes them any more or less likely to be able to beat Chicago or LA, but it's just about depth. It's just about acquiring a specialist to stick on the penalty kill and give you that extra oomph in the lineup.
We should probably toss in the fact that he had a Olympic gold medal in there too. Just a minor event you might recall in Vancouver in 2010. Big day that was, maybe not quite on that level yesterday, but man, it was great to see the lines moving in the NHL, to see the GMs following through on some of that tire kicking. Boy, the Johansson-Jones trade, one of the biggest ones we've seen in a while. So big, we had to get back in the studio one day after our regular podcast and make a special edition happen.
Do you want to quickly touch on the Tokarski trade today?
How were we thinking of ending this pod without talking about the Midnight Toker squeezed out by the Professor Ben Scrivens? Yeah, well, I'll say this. For his largely nondescript time in Montreal, Dustin Tokarski came into a Eastern Conference final when the best goalie in the world went out, and I'll tell you, he was all right. He hung in there in a big spot, and showed a little bit of spine, and things could have gone off the rails in a real hurry in that tight spot, and he asserted himself well. So as Chris Johnson of Sportsnet pointed out on Twitter, he is traveling about as far as is possible to go from St. John, Newfoundland to San Diego. I forget. It was in the 7,000-kilometer range,
upgrade.
Distance. But, yeah, not too, I mean, hey, no one's going to quibble with Newfoundland, but it's just Newfoundland in January.
San Diego.
Well, we'll see. Maybe we'll be back in here before we're scheduled to be again when the Drouin trade breaks. Who knows? But until then, folks, thanks for listening to a special trade edition of Tape to Tape. We'll see you during our regularly scheduled programming next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Well, I told you once and I told you